if you prioritize your partner, then it's just reciprocated. And then that ends up with you experiencing more pleasure. Like, it's supposed to be this coming together experience and not a selfish one. And it can be, like, if that's part of that dynamic and you're playing around with something and that's the agreed upon terms, absolutely. But I think generally speaking, it's like, it's about that mutuality. It's almost by being less selfish that you're going to get the things that you want. And then, you know, I mean, if you make your woman feel like a goddess, she's going to rock your world in all of these other ways, because she's like, man, I feel present, seen, heard. Like, he cares about me. Now I can be soft and vulnerable because he's showing me that he's creating a safe space for me.
But first, a word from our sponsors.
Welcome to the Man Whore Podcast.
Shout out to the simps, the gimps, and everyone who got fucked so hard you left with a limp. This is Billy Procida, and you are listening to the Man Whore Podcast. Welcome to the show. I'm here bringing you sex-positive conversations every Wednesday for what's about to be 9 years. This week on the pod, I have got on retired porn star and present podcaster Candace Horback, a.k.a. Eva Lovia. And I gotta say, this might be the cleanest porn star podcast episode I've ever done. I don't think we talk about a particular blowjob even once, whole show. But I had a great chat with Candace, you know, talking about some woo-woo concepts and her wonderful, loving, caring husband. I think some of you are going to leave this episode with, so how do I get one of those? I look forward to sharing my conversation with her with y'all in just a bit. But first, tickets are now on sale for the Naked Comedy Show. Yes. And yes, I do mean naked. Everyone's always like, so like naked? I'm like, there is no other definition of naked other than not wearing clothes. But what about underwear, which is a subset of clothes? Yes, we're doing naked stand-up comedy again at the Hacienda in Brooklyn on March 18th. We're going to have two shows, an 8 and a 10 o'clock. And if we sell both of those out, then I guess, I don't know what we're going to do. Probably more. I've got a couple really great lineups ready for y'all. And for the first time, we are going to allow the audience to be clothing optional. So again, tickets are now on sale. I'll have a link in the show notes. And then this Sunday, if you need to see me with clothes on, I'll be at the Bridge and Tunnel Brewery at 6:30 p.m. Before I get to my guest this week, I got quite the email. So right now I'm in the editing process for my next Mashable article about how to throw a gangbang. I surprisingly had a lot to say. My first roughest draft was like 3,200 words. The assignment was 1,000 to 1,200 words. Like I said, there's a lot to say. I've whittled it down to about 2,300 and change. My poor editor. But I felt inspired to do a solo bonus episode that I released over the weekend, just really recapping all of my gangbang experiences and even some of my failed gangbang experiences. Oh gosh, I totally forgot to mention about the one time I went to like a hotel in like, I think it was like South Slope or somewhere in downtown Brooklyn. And like, I got there after the time window. There's a strict time window of when that door is going to be unlocked. And so I get there and I'm standing outside the door, but I am not allowed in. And I can hear the gangbang going on the other side of this door. And after a few minutes of standing there, I just kind of shrugged my shoulders and was like, all right, next time be earlier. Anyways, so I put out this bonus episode. And in that, you know, I make mention of a couple of guests from this show, Alex and Andy. Episodes 70 and 71. They were the swinger couple I had some fun with many years back. All that to say is I put up the bonus episode over the weekend. I get this email the next day. Hey, Billy. Been meaning to send you a note and then just listen to that latest bonus episode. And then I immediately went back to the old episode 70 and 71. And then I combed through a bunch of of old emails and contacts. I'm not sure it's the same couple, but damn, it has to be. I ran into a couple back in the day at the old Labyrinth Club. That's before Billy's time, everybody. They called themselves and to me, and used Alex in emails. They also used Team TNA. Anyways, we kept in touch, and then one time they were coming back to New York City and wanted to play, but I was out of town. I connected them with Jefferson, and I guess the rest might be history. Anyway, love the thought that it was the same couple. Wonderful people. Even better, I guess, if I'm wrong and lightning struck twice. On another note, I was listening to that earlier bonus episode where you were sounding pretty down and just wanted to share. You're a brave and successful person, Billy. Right now, just the way you are. You put your mind... I feel like I don't know if I should read this part to all of you, if I should just keep this for me. The irony of the curse of sensitivity and self-doubt is that those are the things that set you apart and help you step over that bar. Your awareness and open mind are what attracts people, but certainly that also makes it harder to navigate the world without the armor that makes most people cold. I've been a fan, listener, and proud Patreon supporter. Oh, that's why I'm reading this part. Patreon, everybody. I've been a fan, listener, and proud Patreon supporter for a long time. I just wanted to say it's been wonderful to listen to your evolution and to learn along with you. I know you'll continue to be successful, and I hope the world, and one day you yourself, recognize the positive impact you have on the world and those around you. Peace. Tom G. No fucking way. The sweet words at the end aside, no way. Tom, you're responsible in the weirdest, most end-around way for me having sex with somebody? That gangbang happened because of you. Like, I don't know where you were out of town, but I'm so glad you were nowhere fucking close to here that week, because you introducing them to Jefferson and Jefferson suggesting he could throw a gangbang for them is what led me to that hotel room back in 2015. I owe you, I don't know, something, a hug, a drink, a high five. Talk about a small fucking swinging world. Thank you for those very sweet, kind words at the end. Much appreciated. Thank you for supporting the Man Whore Podcast on Patreon. Glad you enjoyed the solo bonus episode. I've been trying to get comfortable doing solo bonus shows. Just here and there. To fill in the gaps. And yeah, glad you liked it, man. But also, oh, wow. Wow. Well, you know, I guess speaking of Patreon, yes, I do bonus episodes of the podcast that I put up over there for all of my $5 and up fan whores. Tomorrow, I'll be dropping a new one with Eva Lovia, talking about how her porn career may or may not get in the way of her parenting career. And not only do you get a bunch of bonus shows and behind-the-scenes content, you also get the satisfaction of supporting me, supporting the work that I'm doing, it, making it fiscally possible for me to continue bringing you these conversations and more every week. And right now, I want to do a quick fan whore appreciation moment to one of my members, Quincy White. Thank you, buddy, for your annual membership. Thank you for paying it all up front. Thank you for supporting indie podcasting with your pledge. Become a member today. Support the pod you love at patreon.com/manwhorepodcast or look me up on the Patreon app. Find me on there. Check out the show notes if you want a direct link to that bonus episode titled All About Gangbangs. Yeah. And now for this week's guest, Candace Horback hosts a show called Chatting with Candace. But many of you may recognize her from her former career as a massive porn star. Even now, even though she hasn't shot scenes in like half a decade, she's still like in the top 50 porn stars on Pornhub. Eva Lovia. But let's go ahead. I got a couple ads for you, and then let's go have a chat with Candace. My beginnings just tend to kind of, I find a place to fade in and it rambles. It might be this right now. it's not like I'm going to say, okay, let's pause. And now I'm going to introduce Candace Horback, AKA Eva Lovia. That actually might be it right there. Who knows?
There we go. We're here.
Yeah,
we're
we are it. Here.
Thanks we're for here. Having me.
Thanks for coming on. Yes, it will be interesting. Some people may know you as Candace, but I'm sure also a lot of people know you as Eva. When did you retire? Because there seems like there's still like recent stuff being posted.
So I've been out of the mainstream industry since 2016 mm-hmm. was the last shoot that I did. And then I had stuff come out in 2017, but it was shot prior. So I stopped shooting in 2016. And then from there, I've kind of navigated self-production. So OnlyFans kind of popped up and started getting huge at the perfect timing for me. So everything that I do now is going to be behind that paywall. And, you know, if you want to see anything new, that's where I'm at. But other than that, it's all my old work that's out there.
Mm-hmm. So even mm-hmm. when I see on Pornhub, like an adult time scene posted a year ago, was that just like shot like even further back?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I know. Everything is timeless on the internet.
Yeah. Well, like everything's timeless, but like in porn, I don't think anyone ever realizes like sometimes how long like a content or a shoot can get held. And so someone's like, oh my God, I just saw your new scene. And you're like, I shot that 3 years ago.
Yeah. Sometimes I had a shoot. It was one of my very first photo shoots when I got into the industry. So I think maybe like 2012 or something like that, or 2011. But anyways, one of my first ever photo shoots, and it was just buried. No one used it. And it came out after I left the industry. And then they used it for Hustler. And it was so like, it didn't even look like me. It was so old because, I mean, you know, it was like baby face. I was like, who is that young, fresh, you know, 20-something-year-old woman? I don't even recognize her. But so it's weird. But yeah, they'll hold on to something forever.
It's weird. Like, what is your relationship like to, like, your really old work?
So I've had two babies now. One of them is pretty fresh. So when I see stuff from when I'm, like, just fit as fuck, like, I'm a thoroughbred. You know what I mean? Like, chiseled, and that'll come across my timeline. It's mixed emotions because I'm like, man, I didn't appreciate what I had when I had it, which I think is a lot of us will look back and be like, man, I was so mean to myself unnecessarily. And then also I try to use that as motivation. I'm like, okay, well, I've had that before, so I can get back there, and like, what habits do I need to change? So I use myself kind of as my own motivation. So, yeah, I don't know. It can be encouraging. And then sometimes I'm just like in the middle of an intellectual tweet, and someone will just like throw a GIF up that's like XXX. I'm like, that's not where we were going with this. Focus on the mission.
Yeah, I have my fair share of body issues. And I look back to like college pictures and I go like, I thought that was fat. I thought that was ugly. Like, what was wrong with me? But also, thank God I didn't have the confidence of the body that I had, because I could have been a monster. sometimes hating myself, like it keeps me in check a bit. It's like, because I was thinking so lowly of myself, I considered and still do consider others like often and almost all the time, to the point that I'm always like surprised when someone else isn't. You know, like I was complaining to a therapist recently, like there's an open mic comedy space I go to, and multiple times I will have like a jacket on a chair. I will have my notebook on the table there. Sometimes it will be open. I might have a glass of water, and I'll leave to go like to the bathroom, and I'll come back, and like a couple people will be just sitting there like no consideration for another person. Like, oh, this notebook, we can just move it. Because fuck them. And I'm like, how do you live in a society?
How do you function?
Yeah. Around others. I feel like the last like 3 years have just taught me like capital P people are far more selfish than even I estimated.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. I feel like it's you try to create the reality you want to see. So there's this commencement speech that was really popular back in the day, and I think it's called "What is Water?" And it's essentially you can have the same identical experience, but the way that you choose to frame it is going to dictate your inner peace and even down to your health and how you see the world. So you can see some lady screaming at her child in the checkout line and you can be like, man, she's a shitty mom and that's a shitty kid. Or you can be like, no, she's probably a great mom and that's a great kid. And she probably just got done with a double shift and this is an outlying experience for her. This is not norm. And then just reframe it in a more positive light. So yes, people can be selfish, or you can try to reframe it into a way that's maybe giving them a little bit more grace and then giving you more peace at the end of the day because of that.
Especially if that's just you, like, and this entire experience is only going to live in your head, like on the line, like, okay, it is more peaceful to try to, you know, give some benefit of the doubt. But even if it's going to be like interpersonal and there's stuff going on, you know, in dating, this happens all the time. How often do you hear friends complain, someone ghosted me? Ugh. I was talking to this guy for 3 days and then he ghosted me like I meant nothing. You did. And but like we don't even think about like why. Like, I mean, some shit happens. Life happens. It's not all about you. And when you decenter yourself, gosh, do you start to see more that happens. Like there was a situation once where someone we were arranging like a really sexy scene to do together over Reddit. And she was supposed to be on her way and like this, that, and I'm set up and there's a time and then all of a sudden kind of just drops off. Like it stops answering because I'm checking like, hey, are you coming close? Like, let me know when you're 5 minutes away. Nothing. And now a previous version of me might be like angry and taken as a personal front to me. And like my time's being wasted. I'm being disrespected. And then I clicked on her profile real quick to see, and it turned out she had blocked me. And I was like, the fuck. I logged into an alt account to just to see if she deleted her account or if she had blocked me. It turned out it was a block. So I did message her from the alt. I was like, hey, look, not for nothing. Like I didn't go off on her in all caps. I was like, look, you know, you could at least cancel. You don't owe me an explanation why, but if you gotta go, like release me, you know, don't waste my time. Let me know that like, okay, I can clean up here and I can go do something else with my day. You know, hope everything's okay with you. Hope no one's hurt. But like, you can have that little consideration for my time. Instead of me just being like, fuck you, it's just like, I'm sure something happened. I would have appreciated this. Go forth and live. And you know what happens? She ends up messaging me back. She's like, hey, I'm real sorry. I got cold feet. I got really nervous. You're a stranger on the internet. I thought I could do it. And I was like, that's totally cool. I'm fine. And if you just said, hey, I'm getting cold feet, I'm real sorry, I would be like, you know what?
A woman, that was my first guess as to why that all happened.
Yeah. It was my first guess too. Once I realized it was like a block and she was like on her way, I figured it was that, or like maybe the train got delayed or an accident happened. Maybe someone robbed her. Maybe somebody said the wrong fucking shitty comment on the street. And she was like, you know what? Now I'm out the mood. But like, I think the initial response is, this is about me. You've harmed me, instead of ever thinking about, you know, where they might be coming from.
No, that's in, this is a book I recommend to everyone. It's The Four Agreements. And one of the four agreements is don't take it personal. And I think everyone needs to really hone in on that. If you think about how many times something has happened and you immediately make it self-centered and about yourself, the other person on the flip is doing that too. So it really truly isn't about you. Like, we tend to be the main character in our own story, and it's the same for everybody else. So we want to be the main character in theirs. It's just not the way that it is. So if you do take yourself out of that, it's a lot easier to have positive interactions with people. And there's this interesting study. They found that the more that a person uses the word I, the more likely they were to have like an adverse coronary event later on in life. So it's really interesting. It was in that
coronary. What's a coronary event?
Like a heart attack or maybe high cholesterol, like things like something around your heart, like a negative health effect of your heart. So what book was it? It was like the Book of Joy with the Dalai Lama and the Archbishop Desmond Tutu. It's in that book. But you do yourself and your body a favor if you take the I out as much as you can.
Have you always had that like viewpoint on life? Do you feel like you've gotten good at decentering yourself, or is that still a struggle?
I wouldn't say it's a struggle, but it pops up. Absolutely. I am not an archbishop or the Dalai Lama. I'm very much a person with a lot of flaws. So there's times where I make it about me, or I'll ruminate. I'm like, why didn't that person do that? Especially when it's like new friends and you're trying to establish your place in the friend group or that relationship. And does she really like me? Does she want to be my friend? Did she Google me and find out who I am? And now we can't be friends. So again, it's me. Like, I'm the center of the universe, instead of like, no, everyone has lives and they have jobs and they have other obligations and interests. And some people want to unplug and more people need to unplug. So it's not like, I am probably on the list at like number 1,000, you know, of what's going on in her life. So even, you know, if that, so take yourself out of it and just constantly checking in and recalibrating and trying to figure out, am I living the advice that I always give to everyone else around me, or am I falling off too? Because it's very easy to say, well, you should do this, and then me just completely fall off when no one's looking.
Yeah, when I was today, I told you I was like listening to a couple episodes of your show, chatting with Candace, and listen to you with Adrian from Entourage, and I was like, this chick's pretty, a little woo-woo, a little crystally. And then I went to go listen to your first episode with Danny, and you literally were like, what are you doing for the new moon? I just bought some new crystals. I'm like, okay, this tracks.
Yes, I am. I've got my crystals on the table right here. I'm definitely into the woo.
When did that come into play?
Probably around, well, I mean, I've always been a little bit. So my grandma's, so I'm Japanese and it's on my dad's side. So my grandma's Buddhist, and there's definitely a lot of mysticism that happens over there. A lot of prayer, a lot of belief in like entities and ancestors and, you know, altars, that kind of thing. So I was introduced to it at probably an early age, but as far as like really kind of revamping my curiosity into spirituality, probably 2017. So,
when you're getting out of mainstream porn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. So I believe in God. I believe that we are constantly kind of getting little nudges of our best path forward. So I think that everything happens for you, not to you. And if you listen closely, that you get these little insights to success, whether it's like, you know, true happiness, your path, your purpose, whatever it is. And I just kept having these events happen that would inhibit me from traveling to the West Coast to shoot. And I feel like things get louder and louder, and they seem like the world is maybe happening to you, but that's because I think you're not listening. So it's almost like, do you get the point yet? You're turning left too hard here. Like, you need to kind of readjust and recalibrate. So I have like some health issues going on. I have polycystic ovarian syndrome. Mm-hmm. And so that causes a whole bunch of cysts on your ovaries, like inside on your ovaries. And at the time, I had nothing. I had no events. I'm on, you know, medicine to kind of help mitigate that, and had been for a long time. Out of nowhere, I got like a lemon-sized cyst, like literally the size of a lemon that was on my ovary, and it was excruciating. And my doctor was like, you cannot shoot with this on your ovary. If it bursts while you're on set, you could potentially have to go to the hospital. And it's too much of a risk, because the scenes are obviously not regular sex. It's theatrical and it's entertainment. So it's not as delicate to your body. So that would happen.
Doc wasn't like, look, you can do oral only, but you know, you may want to stick.
Well, no, it goes back to the importance of being very open with your provider, regardless of, you know, what your sex life looks like, if it's because of a profession or whatever. You want to be open so that they can give you the best health care. So she 100% knew my, you know, what my job was. And she's like, no, I mean, the guys are bigger, the scenes are rougher. It's not worth that risk to your body. So I would cancel my shoot and it would go away. And then I would rebook for the next month and it would show back up. And this happened 3 times. And I was like, you know what? I'm just not supposed to do this. I need to figure out something. I've been thinking about exiting the industry for a while, and this was the sign that I needed.
Mm-hmm. And was that kind of an instigator into reengaging with spirituality?
Partially, yeah. So my husband and I went to this biofeedback training. So it's essentially, they teach you how to engage with certain brainwaves on purpose. So if you want to put yourself into an alpha brain state, alpha brainwave state, you can. They do theta. For some people, they do delta. That's like invite only. So we went to that.
That's the Tom Cruise level?
It's pretty.
It's invite only. It costs $15,000. It's just you don't want.
No, you can't do any of the training for that. It's wildly expensive. I think the alpha now is like in the 20s. It's very expensive, but very, very worth it for anyone who's interested. I highly recommend digging into something like that. But so you purposely try to get into like these different altered states, and the guy that runs it is very into mysticism. So we would do this training and then talk to him. And I just found him to be one of the most fascinating people I've ever met in my life. And I was like, well, if he's into this, I'm going to explore it. And then it just really piqued my curiosity. And then now I have crystals and I've got like these little maidens over here, and I'm in it.
What was the effect that all had on your, were you already married yet?
Yeah, I was married. So mm-hmm.
Did it have an effect that like a tangible effect on the marriage?
I would say it's hard to like always pinpoint one exact thing, because I mean, the training itself was huge, and that was like absolutely necessary for me and for the marriage. So like that in and of itself was invaluable. But then I think everything that kind of rolled off of that, what we found, like we have a shaman now, and he's like one of our like best friends. And we're kind of like we have a startup on the side that we're working with him. So that relationship kind of blossomed. We have a shaman.
Like yeah. Someone has a personal chef, you have a shaman.
We have a shaman, yeah. That's very ancient traditions and history in South America. There's shamans. I mean, the Norse had them. So the one that we use, he trained with Native Americans, but his like specialty, or like if you were to put a flavor on it, is more Nordic. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's existed in ancient cultures. I think the West is just trying to kind of pull from all of those, and then with that, you have some that get diluted and maybe are like inauthentic, and then some that are actually the more pure container that they're supposed to be.
Well, because when you say that, I think about like, well, capitalism corrupts. And that's why when you say like, well, this thing, it's like 20 plus grand, the Tom Cruise level of the thing. See, I go like, see, the more expensive it is for something that is so much about spirituality, the overhead on spirituality feels like it's low. So I go, I get suspicious the more expensive it is. If the guy was like, look, $200 and like feed me, I'd be like, that's probably like the best shaman in the world.
Well, so the one that was that expensive was not a shaman. So okay. He's an actual doctor.
But,
and that
but you get the idea of like where I'm going
yeah,
at.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, 100%. No, I agree. There is an issue with the capitalistic model. And then that's happening too in the psychedelic space now, is you have a lot of people that are creating these industries or these businesses out of this arising new industry within the States. So it's like, well, how do you differentiate between someone who's just trying to capture the market and someone who's actually trying to like help enlighten people, I'll use that very loosely, but whatever their healing journey looks like. So it's hard. A lot of it's going to be intuition. It's going to be reference checking. It's going to be, you know, meeting that person and where did you study? Like, what is your continuing education? How do you feel about this? What's your opinion on this? It's like anyone else, you know what I mean? If you're establishing a relationship, you kind of have to pull back the layers to see like who's underneath all of that.
Something that was really interesting you brought up, you know, when you mentioned the PCOS, going to the doctor and being open about whether it's your sex life or your profession that involves sex, like how important that is. Because if your doctor didn't know you were doing porn, she wouldn't know to maybe tell you like you can't do that. And then who knows what the fuck happens on set.
Mm-hmm.
And what, you know, were you like, so what made you comfortable to open up to your doctor?
Because I'm not ashamed. I've never been ashamed of anything that I've done. And I think that's kind of alarming to people. Like, what do you mean? How can you not be? But I don't find sex to be shameful. And I think everyone's allowed to express that in the way that feels authentic to them. Mm-hmm. And that was my path. You know, at the time that I was making the decisions that were best for who I was and who I was trying to figure out that I was. And, you know, that's her job. If I've had doctors that were inappropriate once they found that out, whether it was like very judgmental or just kind of started to treat me different, and I fired them. Like, people don't realize you can fire a doctor. I fire doctors all the time, and then they don't know it. It's one of my favorite things to do.
Every third Tuesday, I fire a doctor for fun.
It will make you feel alive, I'll tell you that, because it's such a power flip, because a lot of these people feel like they're God and that you're a moron because you don't have MD after your name. So I feel like I have a lot of issues with the medical establishment as someone who has chronic health issues or has like dealt with them most of my adult life. So it's very empowering to kind of flip that power dynamic and be like, no, you're fired. You're a moron. And I'm going to find somebody who is up to date on like the latest science of XYZ.
Mm-hmm. PCOS has come up in my Discord server quite a few times. So I know I got a lot of listeners who have or do suffer from it. I'm a dumb boy sometimes, so I don't even know if it's a thing it's a forever, or if it's back in the day. I don't know if it gets done, but you know, PCOS led to you getting out of the mainstream industry. But more personally, like, how did it affect your sex life and relationship with your husband? Because I imagine, like, you know, okay, I can't shoot and do like the varsity level sex stuff, but back at home, like, did stuff have to change
because of the PCOS or because of me being in the industry?
No, the PCOS.
So I met my husband. It's really ironic. The guy that I was dating before, I got diagnosed with PCOS and endometriosis. And then I also had a pap come back irregular. So like pre-cancer in my cervix, all at the same time. I was 19 and I was like totally alone. I remember like dropping to my knees and just crying, because like being a mom was something I'd always wanted. And they essentially told me I was infertile because of all of this. So it caused my boyfriend to start treating me like shit, and we inevitably broke up because of it, because he wanted kids too, and that, you know, was a deal breaker for him. So then I met my husband while I was kind of dealing with all of this from the beginning, and he saw everything I was going through to try to get better. So he's always been really sensitive to it and very attuned to my body when we are having sex, and he'll be, you know, like just like honed in on my face and how soft I am or how tense I am. And be like, does this hurt? Do you need to move? Is this position better? And there have been times where we have to stop, and he's like never guilted me for it. He's like, you know what I mean? Like, that's not a man if he's doing that. So it's my health and my comfort first.
Which, you know, for any of the dudes who bang women who are listening, she does not have to have PCOS for you to do all those things. Like, you should generally pay attention to all those like nonverbal. She's making a face that looks in pain. It's helpful. You might want to ask, hey, are you in pain?
Right. Because some people feel like it's awkward to say something. So maybe if you initiate it, then they'll feel more comfortable. Like, actually, yeah, can we move and switch? Can I turn over? Whatever it is. Like, he's like an empathetic person. Like, he genuinely wants me to have, he cares more about my pleasure, I think, than his own most of the time.
Yeah. How do we get to that? Like, what do we got to do 20 years prior to make more of that?
Well, I think he had a lot of experience before me, before we met. So maybe that's part of it. I truly think that if you prioritize your partner, and this doesn't matter like which sex you are, I think it holds true for both, that it's, if you prioritize your partner, then it's just reciprocated. And then that ends up with you experiencing more pleasure. Like, it's supposed to be this coming together experience and not a selfish one. And it can be, like, if that's part of that dynamic and you're playing around with something and that's the agreed upon terms, absolutely. But I think generally speaking, it's like, it's about that mutuality. So how do we get there? And if I'm showing enthusiasm and he's showing enthusiasm and care and attention, then we're kind of off to the races. Like, we're setting ourselves up for success. So it's almost by being less selfish that you're going to get the things that you want when you're framed in that selfish position. And then, you know, I mean, if you make your woman feel like a goddess, she's going to rock your world in all of these other ways. Cause she's like, man, I feel present, seen, heard. Like, he cares about me. Now I can be soft and vulnerable because he's showing me that he's creating a safe space for me. If you're acting like in a very taking kind of energy, like I'm just here to take from you, well, then she's gonna feel that one way or another. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of energy that's dancing between the two of you. It doesn't have to be said to be known.
Yeah. At this point, like we're the same age, and it sounds like we've both, but whether it's professionally or personally, like we've had some sex, a mm-hmm. bit of it. Right. Mm-hmm. And like at this point, intimacy is so much hotter. Like I, you know, with just casual lovers I have, and I like the people I fuck, weird. And so when we're being intimate, like if she's struggling, I'm holding her and like she's crying, like I sometimes have to apologize for the boner I'm getting. Everyone's clothed. It's not because her tits are pressed against me. It's just like, oh, I am taking care of someone and she trusts me. And oh no, I'm way too aroused for this moment. But like, yeah, like intimacy is the turn on now.
And it's so rare, and it's something that has to be worked on. I mean, you have to be so vulnerable with yourself to be vulnerable with somebody else. And, you know, you could be with someone for a decade and still be chiseling away because you can always go deeper. Like just when you think that you've reached, you know, the finish line of whatever that intimacy is, like I would challenge you, you could absolutely always go deeper with somebody. So if you feel like you're in a rut with someone, well, I would feel that you've gotten caught in a routine and you know, your partner's probably been caught in a routine. So the quickest way to get out of that is to like do something uncomfortable with each other. And shockingly, it's not going to necessarily be something sexual. One thing I recommend all the time is eye gazing. And, you know, so you'll sit there with your knees touching and just like super close to your partner's face and put a timer on the clock for like 1 to 3 minutes and just stare into that person's eyes and be like, I don't know the last time I really looked at you or that you really looked at me. And then you'll want to look away. It will be so uncomfortable, but that's intimacy. So challenging yourself to do things that are out of your normal routine is going to like quickly like reignite that spark.
Oh yeah. The eye gazing. I naturally do that and look at someone that way. Unless we're doing a scene where I'm not supposed to look at you for whatever like fun, kinky reason. But like I'm normally, so like, I mean, I hooked up with someone a couple of nights ago and throughout it, she just kept pausing and be like, what? And this happens all the time. Women are always going, what are you looking at? I'm like, I'm looking at you. You're the naked chick in my bed. And like, yeah, I saw your body. Great. But like, you're the face. This is the part that makes you the most you. So that's what I'm looking at. And it's like such, I experience for so long, such discomfort, from women just by being taken in. And I'm like, is this weird? Is this normal? Like, am I the weirdo that for looking at you, was I supposed to, is there a time limit? How long I can look before I should stare back at your tits? It's almost sad that like, they're not used to just being looked at and appreciated visually.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a lot of people. That was me at one point too. And it's just this lack of like, I don't want to say self-love, but it's a limited version of self-love. It's someone that, you know, doesn't necessarily have that confidence within themselves. So like that level of vulnerability is really uncomfortable for them. And then that means that they're probably not sharing that vulnerability with themselves. There's probably a host of reasons why that's the case. You know, we all have our stories growing up that make us who we are. But it's tough. It's a hard thing to navigate, but you have to, you know, like it's one of those things, you model it and then hopefully it's mirrored back to you.
Can you recall a moment when you and your husband had to do something different? Whether it was eye gazing or something else?
Oh, for sure. I mean, we just had our second baby, so that'll rock anybody's sex life or level of intimacy, because your mind-body connection just from having a kid needs to be reestablished. So I'm reestablishing the relationship with myself, let alone with my husband. So, I mean, when you start to, I guess, reinitiate sex after that transition, it's really clunky. And then you don't, like, you're soft in places that you weren't soft before. So then there's, like, that that you have to kind of deal with, even though he gives me no pause. Like, he's, like, he gives me no sign that he's not cool with anything. He's still is like, you're so sexy and I want to be with you. And I'm like, I'm not. So just like reestablishing that confidence and connection is really hard. And you know, everything's kind of coming back together down there. So you have to navigate, well, this hurts now, and we have to like maybe position it differently and truly let go. It's almost like we had sex the other day, and I just like challenged myself to be the most present as I could, not think about to-do lists or stressors, not to think about my cellulite or like the extra 10 pounds I still have, just to like truly be present with him and engage. Like, even though I didn't want to, my hormones are still crazy, so the sex drive is not naturally there, but to like fake it till you make it, like I'm going to show up to this. And I ended up having a much better time. I felt so much more connected to him than I've felt in a long time. And afterwards, like, he was even getting emotional, and he's like, that is the most you that I've seen in a long time. And I was just like, oh my God, I love this man so much. So yeah, I mean, we've been together for 12 years and two babies, and like, it's still like, you have to check in. Like, you have to check in, because if I didn't, or if I, you know, put the blame on him or put the blame on all the changes that are going on in our life, well, of course I had kids. Like, how dare he try to initiate sex? I'm busy and I'm going through a lot. Like, if I took that self-centered approach, I wouldn't have the kind of relationship I have with my husband. But because I'm like very self-aware and very like self-accountable, like, no, I'm going to show up. I'm going to do my best. And how do I do my best in this situation? Because my marriage is my number one priority. And then something beautiful came out of it.
That is really beautiful. Because I also know that I, you know, I can relate to and recognize those moments when, you know, sometimes you fuck and it's some great sex, but sometimes it just all of a sudden can turn real intimate, and no one's even moving and no one's going soft. No one's uncomfortable. Just looking at each other and just like for a moment being like, this is great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, forget the thrusting for a moment. Like, let me just drink you in with my eyes. Let's just smile the shit out of each other. Before we get back to the whole coming stuff, you know.
Yeah, because everything in the middle is great too.
Yeah, no, that's very beautiful. 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just trying to get, was there like a break, or at some point were y'all non-monogamous, or?
Both to yes. So when I was making the transition to doing boy-girl scenes, we did have like a little bit of a lull. Like, I was out in LA for a few months, like probably 2 or 3 months, just shooting, and we were not in a good place. He was dealing with a lot because of that decision, and I was dealing with a lot because of that decision, and we were still so young and very new into the relationship. So, like, you know, it was only a couple years in. Mm-hmm. So it was navigating what's the payoff, like, is all of this kind of worth it? But obviously we've ended up saying yes and worked through it, but that was really difficult. And then I'm a very shy person, so I tend to kind of be on like the outside of the room and just, you know, kind of like peeping at other people's conversations and just like very voyeuristic in that way. It's just where I'm comfortable. And then that has led me to having like a really unique perspective, because I can see everyone's storylines kind of play out simultaneously. So a lot of
like, if
of
you're
women,
at a party, you're like, you're on like the nice sofa chair in the corner being like, I'm just going to watch, watch how this party goes.
Yeah, I do that, or I'll find my little comfort zone. Or if we're on set and I'm in makeup, I kind of will like hang out with the makeup artists and, or, you know, with some of the crew and just kind of observe. So throughout that, I saw a lot of women that were in the industry, and they have a stance when it comes to sex. This is a good majority, or at least was at the time, that sex on set is different than sex at home. So because of that the man wasn't allowed to be in an open relationship. Like, they were monogamous because her sex was just for work. So sure, they would still define the relationship as monogamous. He wasn't allowed to be with anybody else, but she's allowed to be on set because she's getting paid. And I didn't find that to be fair. Like, yes, there's a difference between fucking and making love, and there's a difference between intimacy and sex. I agree 100%. But at the end of the day, like, there still is sex happening.
Yeah,
And I just felt like that was a recipe for resentment and for like the relationship to fester. So I would rather go through my own growing pains, because I was wildly jealous, like through my own growing pains for a chance, for a shot in hell for this relationship to work. Because otherwise, I looked at it, it was like guaranteed not to. During that time in the industry, we were open. And then that was a battle too, because he did a much better job at kind of taming his jealousy or understanding it much more holistically than I did. I was a slow learner. I was a very slow learner. But to me, again, it was what was fair. And it's like, practice what you preach. Like, I'm not going to go do one thing and have you have a different set of rules.
Before I ask, you know, how you did grow through those jealousy, how you did deal with those jealousy growing pains, which is, you know, porn or not porn, very common with folks in non-monogamy, is what was it about this guy? You'd been with him only a few years. If he's your age-ish, then y'all are in your early 20s. What was it about him where you're like, I want to make this work?
People can be like, oh, well, I forget the term for it, but it's basically when you like backcast and you are happy with where you're at, so you can kind of justify everything looking back. And you're like, well, of course I see the signs now. But you can ask anyone that knows me or like knew me from when I first met him. I had just left that other relationship that was not good. I met him and it was the first person I met where I would just like felt calm and comfortable right away. I didn't have butterflies. I wasn't anxious. I wasn't overanalyzing anything. And I turned to my girlfriends and was like, I'm pretty sure I'm going to marry this guy. And they're like, no way. This is a rebound and he's a player and there's not a chance. And I was like, I'm telling you, something feels different. And it was just like this sense of calm that I've always felt with him. Like, he's just always been my person. And to me, like, I grew up with chaos. And then my relationship, my romantic relationship, was chaos. And then it almost was like for the first time, my soul met safety. Yeah. And then I was just like, that's my guy. So to me, like, nothing was worth letting that go. So I was going to try to and it sounds crazy because obviously I made a decision that did potentially jeopardize that. But the way that he presented it was like, I'm not giving you an ultimatum. I'm going to try my best to stick this out with you. And I'm not going to prevent you from being you, but I can't guarantee how I'm going to handle this because I've never been in this situation. And he was just so honest with me. So I felt like we, no matter what, we would find each other again. So I guess that's how I justify making that decision. But I don't know. I just knew. I just knew he was my person.
Ooh, got goosebumps. Making me think of my most recent, I have that, but like in my early 30s with my most recent ex, it was just like, I don't know how to tell you, but this is different. Even if, you know, been in other relationships, but there's something where I'm like, it's an intangible entity, quantity thing where I'm like, can't write it down. It's just, this is different. You know, it doesn't mean the other things were fake. It didn't mean the other things weren't what they were, but this is like this secret boss mode level I didn't know was in the video game. But like, if you tap on the third red door on the left 7 times and hit X circle, it opens and you're like, whoa. Mine just didn't work out. Or, you know, who knows? She's not listening. I don't know. Maybe she is. That's weird.
Maybe she is. Yeah. The story's not over.
But that's very beautiful. And so how did you work through those jealousy pains as someone who's in porn? You know, you were in the situation where he was off having more sex than you. No. Are the one definitely having more sex, and yet you were the one feeling jealous, and you're not the only person I've heard have this before. So how'd you work through it?
I honestly feel it's probably like how a lot of men are. You know what I mean? Because men are like, oh, open relationship sounds great. And they're like, well, your partner would also, oh, never mind. You know what I mean? So it's like it's very easy to imagine if you're the one that's getting all the perks. But it was a long process, and it's really hard to kind of articulate the whole thing entirely. I would say
how about like if you had 2 or 3 tips from your personal experience, what might they be?
First, you have to look at the history of the relationship and your partner. And has that person ever given you reason to believe that they're going to leave you, or that they don't love you, or they're not committed or invested into you and the relationship. So, you know, is he treating you respectfully? Like, all of these markers of a healthy relationship, like, go back and like tick all of those off. So if that's the reason, does it really matter if he goes out for a boys' night and turns his, you know, isn't glued to his phone the whole time to make sure that he's like telling you every time he switches seats? So like, it basically, are your emotions valid? Because sometimes we let them take the wheel, and when we say, of course, like, I feel it, so it must be true. Well, you have to be able to separate your emotions from logic. So like, take a couple breaths and then get into your more analytical mind, and then go through the list and be like, has he given me any indicators that, you know, he's going to be unfaithful, or he's going to break that trust? Because the thing is we create these rules and we think that that's what's keeping us safe. And it's not. Like, men, it's not like men cheat when they're allowed to cheat. That rule was still there and they broke that. It's like, do we align on our principles and our values? And that's what holds that relationship together. So when someone veers off of that, that's their own decision. It's not because the rule wasn't there. Mm-hmm. So by overly controlling, or like seemingly controlling, your partner, I think you're kind of like dooming the relationship. You have to have that freedom. So you need to give someone ultimate freedom, and they're hopefully going to make the choices that align with your values and principles of that relationship. So over control is not the answer. It's not going to work. It's just more of like that contract that you make with each other for the relationship. So, you know, not getting emotional, I would say, is the big key takeaway. And then also,
did you have a rule that like was really fucking important to you that then now you are like, that was a silly one?
No, I feel like once we, because it's a living, breathing thing. Relationships are constantly evolving. So we would always kind of check back in with each other. We still do now, as to like what we kind of expect from each other and where our boundaries are. But no, I think I was really intentional with like our guidelines for our relationship. And I think he was as well. And all of them made sense. Like, we, you know, they had to be of a certain age, because younger girls are more dramatic. That's just a fact. Like, it had to be certain degrees of separation away. Like, okay. They're very reasonable rules.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was the next thing you were going to recommend to people?
So the other thing, and this is kind of like taking my husband's lead, and I think it's what led him to having like a better success rate than I've had, but it's like really sitting down with yourself, and this isn't like, you know, 10 minutes you're going to get the answer. This is going to be ongoing and in silence, and really checking in and getting down to like first principles of that feeling or emotion. So why is it that I have this feeling? Like, where was the first time I felt this? Like, whatever that social rule is, was that given to me as my own programming, or did I actively and consciously accept that as something that I want for myself in my relationship? Because sometimes there'll be something there and you're like, why is that? Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, maybe it's, we'll say marriage, right? Maybe it's the actual legal marriage and you think that that's super important to have. And then you do this and you're like, no, I just need to be committed. Like, those are, I see those things as separate. And I realize that this other thing isn't important. Or whether it's having children and you sit with that, and you're like, well, why do I want children? And really get down in the first principle. So it's kind of deconstructing all of these things that people, like our parents, our teachers, our society has thrown onto us as ours. And then deciding, do I want to keep that or not? Because I don't think that people realize, like, that's up to you. You get to make your own rules. You get to construct your life as you want. And you can kind of pick and choose, you know, which spices you want to add.
Mm-hmm. No, that's really good. It's a lot of people who are defaulting. I love that, because I would say the same about whether it's non-monogamy or, you know, marriage, whatever it is, like, so I just want people choosing stuff. Right. I actually thought about this when you were talking to Adrian, because y'all were talking about like femininity, masculinity. Y'all were talking about kind of the roles of stuff. Like, so y'all had brought up the idea of like, oh, well, it feels like people are saying like, don't be, you know, you a housewife, you have to be a boss bitch or something. And I was like kind of in the shower saying out loud to myself, I was like, no, we're saying like, you want to have the option. If you want to be like the stay-at-home mom, like, we want you to choose that, not because you think that's what I don't want people defaulting into stuff. I want them to intentionally choose whether if you want to be monogamous, choose monogamy. If you want to, if you prefer those more traditional gender roles, make sure you've chosen that and not that like you just think that's what it is because that's what it's supposed to be.
Well, I agree. I agree with that. I agree with choice. I think that's huge. And like conscious choice, like you've really sat with it and that's where you align. And that's beautiful when that happens. What I would push back a little bit is maybe it's just like the circles I find myself in, but it's people that kind of like treat stay-at-home moms or like people that have made that their mission as lesser than. It's like, well, you didn't really try. You took the easy route. Like, you should have started a company and then had kids. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's
almost
like
those people are assholes. Like,
they are totally. Right. And it's like I was speaking more to that. It's like we push. Like, you are going to find fulfillment and self-worth only if you climb this ladder. And you become like this, you become the man that you don't have, essentially. There's not a lot, and it's starting to happen, but there's not a lot of like, no, it's also very fulfilling if you want to just build a family. And if that's your sole mission, like that can be equally fulfilling, if not more, than building a company. And it's just like, you know, the 90s was like girl power, rah, rah, Spice Girls, but there wasn't like, no, build a family. That's also super important.
Well, with that, but that was there the whole, that was the default. And I think we see this whenever in, you know, whether we're talking like race or sexualities or genders or like the thing that was the norm, like that was represented. It was represented in not always the best ways, but like the idea like a woman stays home and keeps the home good and is a good wife and raises the kids. I mean, but for decades, for the history of telling stories, that's how it's been. And the reason there needs to be overcorrection in that kind of representation just to start to balance the scales that when you and I are like starting to wonder like how this, you know, celebrate our 60th birthdays, hopefully and maybe then things don't have to be so overcorrected, but just like we need that because there's no one even knew that was an option to go start your own company until they started seeing that that was an option. No one stopped, you know, we haven't stopped having moms in movies who are just moms with seven lines or who are moms with fleshed out characters who are still at home. It's just now they're trying to get more of the other stuff. But I agree with you. Like, you're lazy if you don't start a company. I don't think that's on the poster. And anyone who's doing that is really being fucking judgmental as shit. And it's like, mind your business, get back to your company that you are allegedly crushing with your 17 followers, right? Like, you know, focus on you. So I know I would agree. Like, we shouldn't be telling people that that's an invalid way to live.
Right.
We didn't stop having the traditional things in the process. I check all the TV shows and most of those married couples are still monogamous on there that we know of.
That's interesting. Yeah. I had Joffrey Miller do an episode on the podcast and he's like a fascinating guy. I really like him. But I feel like the number was, especially for millennials, it was like 1 in 3 or maybe 1 in 5. I think it was 1 in 3 though, have been in a non-monogamous relationship at some point, like a consensual non-monogamous relationship, yet it's not reflected anywhere on the media. Like, it's still completely taboo. And I was like, that's really interesting because we obviously, if it's 1 in 3, then people are curious. And for some people, that is the right decision. And then for some people, monogamy is the right decision. But yeah, you don't see it at all.
Yeah, it's interesting also because like the reality of non-monogamy, like there are so many people who do that, but you just don't know because they're socially monogamous. Because like at the end of the day, it's their sex life and not everyone needs to know everyone's sex lives if they don't want to. So like, yeah, like there might be characters who the writer's room knows is non-monogamous, but there's no storyline that shows it. And we're starting to get that representation out there. And but yeah, no, you're right. It's crazy how little we see it in media, as well as all these, you know, other markers, other choices, other lifestyles, other identities that have always been there, but haven't made it to the screen. But, you know, ideally the change is it's happening. Candace, I guess I would say, so it sounds like you've gotten over the jealousy and, you know, things are in a good spot. We got the second kid.
Yeah, we're in a great spot. No one is, I mean, we've fallen into monogamy, which I think is really funny and adorable, but we say like monogamish because like, it's not the season right now, but it's not like that option is forever closed. It's like right now we're, our house has to be in order before we, you know, you go out and spend all this other energy on someone else.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it just, we just look at it differently. You know what I mean? Like if something were to happen, and let's say our lines get crossed and I find out that he's with somebody else, it's not like I'm going to lock him out and change all the locks and be like, the kids are mine. You can see him every other Friday. Like, fuck that. You know
what I
mean? Show
up and pick up your crystals. Right.
Yeah. Like that is not how, that's absolutely never going to be an option. So it's just the way that we look at sexuality is just different than most.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, Candace, I've kind of, you know, not like leaned into the porny questions. It's typically not even really where I'm interested in at this point, but I do have a Patreon only channel in my Discord server called Ask the Guest. You've actually gotten the most questions anyone's gotten since I started doing this a couple months ago. There were a lot of questions. So
that's awesome.
If you got a little time, maybe a little Patreon bonus episode, I want to ask you what the patrons had. Because they're all porn related or adjacent. But for now, you know, where can people go to find you, follow you, and check out your podcast?
So you can go to chattingwithcandace.com, and the podcast is everywhere you listen to podcasts and YouTube. That website has all my Candace socials. And then I'm probably the most active on Twitter, and that's Fall in Lovia. You actually have to type it in because I'm shadow banned, which is a whole other thing. But yeah, that's where I'm
been
at.
Been there.
Yeah,
I think it was because I told Bell Knox to like shut up or show her pussy. I think I think that's what did it. Well, folks, go check out the Chatting with Candace podcast. I'm gonna be on it. We have no idea the timelines of our release stuff, but like you'll go hit follow so you don't miss me. And exactly. You can also go hear that fun. I like the interview with Adrian. I didn't realize he's gone down that path. That was interesting. Long time since Entourage. Well, Patreon people, you're going to hear the bonus episode tomorrow. For now, Candace, why don't you go ahead and say goodbye to everybody?
Well, thank you so much for having me again. This was a ton of fun. And thank you for listening, everyone. I hope I see you on my side.
Relax. Don't do it. Don't skip to the next podcast. Relax. Don't do it. When you want to come or hear more content. Hey, hang tight real quick. The bonus teasers are back. If you hang tight real quick, you're going to hear more of me with Eva Lovia, a.k.a. Candace Horback. You just got to stay through just a few plugs, and I'll give you some more juice to go off on. Folks, all my links are always in the show notes. My socials, my sponsors, my email, all that good juiciness, always in the show notes. Okay. Naked show tickets in the show notes. It's all that the show notes, it's where it's at, everybody. It's what's going on. It's what's hip. You know what else is hip? The Champagne Room. Ooh. Yeah, Discord, it's all the rage. But yes, the Champagne Room is our super free, super fun, super sex positive Discord server. Always a bunch of very fun conversations going on every day in there. If you've been looking to make some like-minded friends, if you don't really have anyone to talk to about your kinkier interests, the Champagne Room is a safe and fun, and most importantly, fun place for you to be. Link in the show notes, or you can go to manwhorepod.com/discord. Great community, lots of support, lots of sex stories, lots of memes in there. Tomorrow, my $5 and up fan whores are going to get a bonus episode with Candace. We're talking about, we're doing all of my Ask the Guest questions on this bonus. And, you know, a lot of them have to do with porn and parenting. How is she going to handle her present with people who find out about her past? I'm about to play a teaser of that for you in just a few moments. But if you want to hear the whole thing, go join my Patreon. And here's the fun part. Right now, you can hear this whole bonus show for free. Right now on my page, I'm offering 7-day free trials at the $5 tier. That gets you access to all the behind the scenes content and posts. That gets you all your special Discord benefits. Also gets you access to hundreds of bonus episodes, including this one and the All About Gangbangs from the weekend and all the ones from before. So if this feels enticing, go join up today. If it doesn't, Now, excuse me, I gotta go open a big box of sex toys so I can do my first ever proper sex toy reviews. Wish me and my butthole luck. Stay slutty. How did it go from like whore to bestie?
You'd have to ask her. I think she's a really self-aware and like unique person. So her husband was like my number one fan. And that's how she knew who I was and what I did. And then I think that flared up some stuff for her. So she just made all of these assumptions about what kind of person is in that career and, you know, painted the picture that most people do of me when they first find out. And then I think just by engaging with me and seeing that there was a there wasn't anything in alignment from the characterization that she made of me, like the caricature, and then the actual me. You know, those are two very different people. So just giving me, I don't know, giving me time and space to just show her that who I actually was, like accurately represent myself. And then I think she then realized, oh, this isn't about Candace. This is about my own stuff. And Candace is actually pretty great. So yeah, now we're best friends.